We'll continue our study of the methodology of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. We're going to study tonight of Yirtz Hashem, Perek Chaf Aleph, which is the third chapter of seven chapters dedicated to the methodology of Rabbi Yisrael in the book Tenuat HaMusar of Rav Dov Katz. Once again, as I say always, I try to without burdening you with tedious reading of the text, I try to summarize the text as I go along in English, and I'll point out certain places where I think you should highlight it. I also discovered another sefer, which we won't study tonight, but I already prepared a handout for next week. Maybe I'll hold on to it. You'll tell me. And this is a book called Israel Salanter by Hill Goldberg. Most of the book is not for us, but after reading through large chunks of it, I found one section I think is very relevant to the methodology of Rabbi Yisrael. Now, what Rav Dov Katz does at the beginning of each chapter, he gives you a little bit of an overview of the various topics, subcategories that he wants to cover. So let's just go through that very quickly. That'll give us an overview. Number one, he wants to talk about two types of study of Torah. There's a study of Torah which he calls iyuni, which means it's theoretical. And then there's a limud, a different type of Torah study, the agenda, the goal of which is to arouse a person, have an impact on his soul and his ethical makeup. Then he wants to speak about what's called kvius and ritzifus. It means it's very crucial in the methodology of Musar that we have time that's set aside, like every Monday night at 5:30. Okay, and we have Ritzifus, which means it's got to be continuous. We got to go from time to time. And we'll see this in terms of the greater picture of Yisrael, that Rabbi Yisrael's belief is in something called Hergel, that when you repeat yourself over and over again, that's when it has an impact and it penetrates into your soul. The third element in this chapter that we want to study is the proposal on the part of Rabbi Yisrael, which really took off after his death in the next generation amongst his two students, to establish what he calls Batei Musar, which are houses of Musar. Very unique. This part of the chapter I found very exciting. Why is it so important to set up these Batei Musar? How they're going to radically change and impact upon many communities in Israel? And what's the difference, what we call compare and contrast, between a base Musar and a base Chassidus? Base Chassidus means what we call today the Chatzer of a Rebbe, where the Rebbe has his disciples, and Rabbi Yisrael says that our idea, our concept of a base Musar is radically different than Batei Chassidus. The next part of this chapter is going to be dedicated to what's called Cheshben HaNefesh, constantly self-introspection, Hishtapchus HaLev, meaning getting down to the emotional part of the soul and having an impact on that soul. Because Rabbi Yisrael's philosophy is always going to be that the intellect is only one faculty in man, and it doesn't necessarily have a direct impact on the soul. The next part of the discussion is going to be about what Rabbi Yisrael calls a hospital, so to speak. In modern Hebrew, we call it a mirpa'ah, clinic. A clinic for spiritual development, a clinic for ethical development. And then he's going to talk about two types of Batei Midrashos, which are houses of study. One is going to be for the general public, and that's going to hope that the people, the community, will gravitate to that base Midrash. And then there's individual's own private base Midrash, where he introspects and he knows himself, and in a quiet and peaceful mood, he can study himself and then uplift himself. Then we have a pretty radical part of Rabbi Yisrael's methodology. What was common in those days was the study of Or Chaim, which is the one wing of law that deals with the daily laws, like Kriyat Shema, Tefillin, Brachos. And Rabbi Yisrael says that there's another branch of Torah study in the Shulchan Aruch, in Halacha, that's equally important, if not more important. And here, once again, he gets into a description of the generation that he lives in, and he feels that in a moral, ethical level of interpersonal relations, we are in a low state, says Rabbi Yisrael. And therefore, we have to focus our attention on the learning Halacha, but not not so much the archaim, and that for sure, but more important, in order to have an impact on the inner mechanism of the soul. You remember we spoke about the kokos kehim. I think, Rabbi, you were here when we spoke about that a few weeks ago, that there's some latent part of the soul that has its own powers and its own energy forces. And that was Rabbi Yisrael's mashal about the fire, and he wakes up and he looks for his son. And in order to penetrate from halacha and the study of halacha down to the kochos kehim, we're going to have to study choshen mishpat, which is that branch of law that deals with ethics. And that has to be brought up to the highest level. Again, we're going to get into details as we go through the chapter, but just to get the overview and touch a little bit on the bases that he wants to touch on. So again, this was a radical, revolutionary change in the whole curriculum of study that would elevate the laws of Mamonos to the same status as what we call Iser Veheter. You know, we study the laws of some splashing of milk on a pot, on a fleshing of pot, you know, but maybe we should ask the question about, am I allowed to turn on the water faucet in such a way that it might flood your field? And that we don't study. The next part of this chapter, which is also very, very interesting, is the special role of the month of Elul and the 10 days of Tshuva. Rabbi Yisrael sees in those 40 days out of the Hebrew calendar year a golden opportunity to achieve the goals of Musar, if we only utilize that period of time to its maximum. Then Rabbi Yisrael has an analysis of the study of Torah and the study of Musar to compare and contrast. He speaks about preparing for the Yom Noroim. He speaks about the 13 principles of the human soul and how to prepare and improve all these 13 parts of the soul. And then finally, at the end of this chapter, we're going to have a story in which he tells about a certain businessman, and that's going to be a mashal from which we're going to derive conclusions. So right now, without further ado, let's begin the chapter 21 in Rav Dov Katz's book. Rav Yisrael says we must study Musar, and he gets into the details of a schedule and a program of how to study Musar. Very detailed discussion. First, he establishes that there's an obligation incumbent upon every Jew to set up time, and he should be kavua, it should be set, you know, without changing it from one week to the other, for the study of Musar. And Rabbi Yisrael says, who am I addressing? Am I addressing the lowest of the low? No, he says, I'm addressing every member of Klal Yisrael, even someone who's a dayan, he's a judge, he's a scholar, he sits on the seat of judgment, all the way down to the person who works the mill, men and women, scholars and ignorant people, young people and old people, rich people and poor people. Everyone has to get involved and dedicate himself to the study of Musar. And he says that the study of Musar breaks down into two branches. Number one is Iyun. What he means is to study the books of Musar and try to understand them. Musar is a study and analysis of the human soul and the mechanism of the various impulses of man. This has to be studied no less than any other discipline, any other science. He calls it Haskalah. Haskalah Miloshon Seichel. That word is going to play a major role in Rabbi Yisrael's methodology. Seichel means the knowledge, the detailed knowledge. The more you understand, the more it can have an impact on your soul and bring you to fear of God. That's what he calls Iyun. That's an abstract study and analysis. I would add a comment here of my own, that from this perspective, it's almost as if each and every one of us have to be psychologists. We have to study what's called kochot ha-nefesh, the makeup of the soul of man. But then he goes on to say that there's another type, another method, another mood and approach to the study of Musar. And that means to speak out a mimer. A mimer means an essay of Musar with an emotional sing-song, loud voice, and with Sa'arat HaNefesh. That was the subject of last week's discussion in chapter 20, where you have to wake up and arouse the emotional side of man. in order to make an impact on the Kochos HaKehim. And that requires Shinun. Shinun is the word here on the last line of page 297. Shinun means to review it over and over again. It requires Manim Kvuim, as we turn to page 298, set time periods. And whatever those set time periods, they shouldn't be too far apart. There should not be a long interval. Because what happens is, every time we study this Musa with his Orus, with emotional fervor and inspiration, it makes an impact. But those impacts have to be added together. They have to be, what's the word I'm looking for? They have to be integrated by repeating them over and over again. Now, you can't integrate something if that impact has gone already. So while it's fresh, then you could go to the next level and re-strengthen that feeling, that Roshem. So that, as we said at the outset, Rabbi Yisrael puts a tremendous emphasis on shinun, on hergel, on repeating something over and over again. That was based, if you remember, on a psychologist named Coif, a French psychologist. And Rabbi Yisrael says that he thinks once a week is the barest minimum. If you're gonna set aside time once every 2 weeks, is already a long interval. And if possible, he should make sure that each session of his study should be made up of at least a few minutes' time. You know, if it's just a 60-second period of time, it's not going to generate that Roshem. So again, the important thing is to have this impact, one after another. Remember the mashal that he gave from Rabbi Akiva, who sees the drops of water penetrating into the stone. It's an accumulation. Then Rabbi Yisrael says that we have to set up what's called a Beis HaMusar. This I found absolutely fascinating. A Musar house. Now you and I may ask, did Rabbi Yisrael really succeed in doing this? Well, the answer is yes and no. What do I mean by yes and no? In his lifetime, it didn't really spread. But after his death, under the leadership of Rav Itzel Blazer, who we've mentioned time and time again, who was perhaps Rav Yisrael's main disciple, there were over 40 Batei Musar that were established, 40 different Batei Musar, houses of Musar study, all over Lithuania. Now, why do I say he didn't succeed? Because today, we don't really have the institution of Beis HaMusar. That doesn't mean to say there is no Beis HaMusar. There is a Beis HaMusar. And the Beis HaMusar you'll find in a neighborhood in Yerushalayim called Unsdorf, if you've ever heard of it, which is near Mattersdorf. And that Beis HaMusar is still functioning in the spirit of Rabbi Yisrael's program. And we're going to see exactly what are the elements that go into building, establishing a Beis HaMusar. Number one, it's got to be a place that's panui tamid. It's got to be open. Its doors have to be open 24/7. Again, Rabbi Yisrael wasn't aware of the security issues that we have. Okay, we need an ish bitachon. And it's got to be open me'es le'es, yomom v'layla, 24/7. It's like the SOS over here, because Rabbi Yisrael would call it SOS. We really need it desperately. And what has to be inside the Beis HaMusar? Number one, it's got to be a comfortable place, meaning all the comforts that make a person want to gravitate towards that place. Number two, it has to be supplied with a library of Sifrei Musar. And the ultimate goal is that whenever a person feels in his heart that he wants to run and find seclusion, almost find what we call shelter in an atmosphere of Musar, where he can spend even a few minutes of his time to introspect, to study Musar, to sing it, and to arouse himself to Musar for so many minutes, whatever he has. There should be no mafriya, there should be nothing stopping him. Now again, if you're talking about a large city like Tel Aviv or like New York, you know, you'd have to have a Beis HaMusar on every block. But he's talking about the smaller towns in Lithuania, and even in the bigger towns, maybe he would set up a Beis HaMusar that would be in one area, in another one, in another area, in central areas that people could gravitate there and find. And here's the main point of entering into a Beis HaMusar. it's a time. Excuse me. If you're looking at the paragraph of Yisrael, you count down five lines, and I'd like you to highlight the words Lehit Pashet Mikol Tirdosov. Wait, in the paragraph that starts Rabbi Yisrael.
Okay.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, underlying this word Lihit Pashet.
Okay.
And Mikol Tirdosov. Those are the three words. You can skip those two words in the middle.
Okay.
Because then he's getting back to the time period. But what's critical here is that a person takes a complete break. You know, this reminds me of meditation rooms, you know, where you find in the, you can find it in public areas, and if you go to the east, you know, you'll find it in the eastern countries. And this idea means that you literally step out of this world into a whole new world, a world in which you leave, you know, the petty and pressures of the world behind you, and you find yourself totally in total silence and seclusion, totally comfortable with, you could be with yourself. And on the next line, again, we want to underline three words, ulehityached im nafsho, which is very interesting. We have a nefesh, we have a soul, but we very rarely connect to our soul. And we need the proper atmosphere, which is undisturbed, to be able to focus on our soul. Like Socrates said, the first rule of ethics is know thyself.
The verse on this sounds like the Rav Nachman of Breslov of his Bodidus, where he suggests an hour a daily of sort of like a private.
Right, right. I don't think Rabbi Yisrael is hoping for an hour a day, but he's definitely hoping that from time to time, even if it's once a week, you'll be able to gravitate towards this place and have private time with yourself. He calls it the Ein Mafria. There's no one disturbing you, and you can somehow, In that atmosphere, cut yourself off from the avarim, you know, from those parts of the human body that in a sense incarcerate you and limit you. And therefore, you're able to achieve what he calls iyun gadol, some real serious introspection on a very profound level. And here he contrasts his concept, his vision of a beis musar, with that of a beis chassidus. He says that a beis chassidus, which is otherwise known as a shtibel, people don't know where the word shtibel comes from. The word shtibel comes from the Hasidic world, where a Rebbe used to have sort of like an open court where the Hasidim could come in. However, a beis chassidus is a place where everything goes on, anything that's related to Judaism. Number one, Torah study. Number two, tefillah. Number three, the study of chassidus. Not only that, it's a place where friends get together. It's a social place. Again, Rabbi Yisrael is not trying to knock this down. He's just trying to describe it, and then by contrast, to understand what a Beis HaMusar is all about. In a Beis Chassidus, people actually schmooze. He calls it Sichat Chulin. They tell stories, they sing songs, they have banquets, they have, you know, kichel and kugels, and they have all sorts of kiddushes. That's all fine. That's the Hasidic approach. But in contrast, the Beis HaMusar is to be exclusively dedicated to the study of Musar and the Avoda of Musar and applying methodology of Musar. It's a place for contemplation. It's a place that has to be quiet, as opposed to Beis Chassidus, which is loud and robust. It's got to be a place of hisbonenus, where a person could really focus on his thoughts and on introspection. Rabbi Yisrael, interesting, is even opposed to setting up a minyan for davening in a Beis HaMusar. That itself will undermine the purpose of the Beis HaMusar. It's going to add a whole new element of loud noise. Again, I don't know if Rabbi Yisrael would go too far with this, meaning, I don't know, it was extreme. If, let's say, for example, you had a drasha and musar, and then after the drasha you had people learning musar, and then at the end of the day, at 10 p.m., they wanted to daven ma'ariv together. I don't know if it was possible, if you had to invalidate that possibility. But as a general rule, it was crucial for Rabbi Yisrael to set up a base musar that doesn't overlap with a base HaKnesses, with a base HaMedrash. You have a place where you go to daven, you have a place where you go to learn, and now you have a place for contemplation. It's not a place for Torah study. And therefore, Rabbi Yisrael says that we want to set up a place where a person could focus exclusively on this experience of Musar and create that Roshem that's going to impact on the Kochos HaKehim. And therefore, he describes the Beis HaMusar as a kind of a clinic. It's not a clinic for physical ailments, but it's a clinic for what he calls nafshi, what he calls chole nefesh, for, you know, some illness of the soul. And again, Rabbi Yisrael describes the nature of the soul. And here, Rabbi, he uses taka that word that you mentioned before. This is next to the last line on 298. His bodhidus. Okay, so that's a word that comes from one particular branch of Hasidus. I'm not sure that your classical vision or function of a base Hasidus was his bodhidus. I think even in Bretzlov they used to send you out to the forest to do his bodhidus. But he wants to say that he's got to enter into this base of Musar and Hishtapchus Hanefesh V'Saras HaRuach. Again, if you look at the bottom of page 298, the last few words, this is a classic terminology of Rabbi Yisrael. We've got to get down to the lave. We have to get down to the ruach. We need a stormy, emotional kind of arousal. And he says that on page 299, sometimes we can go as a group, sometimes we go as individuals. And it's very important that a person can study his ideas b'kol gadol, out loud if he has to, and that means that he may want to have privacy. And it's got to always be with his sraksus. It's always going to be with an emotional state. And he has to read and study about tikkun ha-nefesh. Okay, now that concept called tikkun ha-nefesh, we're going to have a lot to talk about. So just if you could write it down now for the time being, as a general concept called tikkun ha-nefesh, which means to make a transition or a transformation of the soul. And again, as I say, we have a lot to talk about that. He says that it's possible that if we go in as a group, from time to time, a member of the group wants to get up, and he wants to give what he calls a masa. Masa means some sort of a, not your organization, I don't mean that, but a masa meaning some sort of a lecture or some sort of an emotional, it might not even be formal, with the structure of one paragraph, a second paragraph, third paragraph. It's really just to be ma'orer other people. So sometimes if I experience a hisorus in which I feel an awakening, that's a moment where I feel I can share it with others. And I can tell my friend Chazak, meaning you should strengthen yourself with this idea just like it had an impact on me. So that's a great sharing of ideas. And this masa has to always be, as we said before, bisrachus. It's got to be geared towards emotional arousal and roemus hanefesh, to bring the soul up to a higher level. And he quotes a famous pasuk in Tanakh that says, "Lev tar bar liyakim, ruach nachon chadesh bekirbi." We want to go into this base of Musar and come out with a new soul, so to speak, a soul that's closer to God. Now, another function, another purpose and goal of the Beis HaMusar, in the paragraph that starts Beis HaMusar, is to make a public demonstration. In other words, everyone should know in the town of the existence of this Beis HaMusar. Anytime he passes the Beis HaMusar, he reminds himself that, I need a spiritual cleansing and uplifting. And a person should constantly have a reminder. He says, like, if you pass a doctor's office or a hospital, a clinic, you remind yourself, hey, I haven't taken a blood test in a while. It's about time that I took care of my health. Here too, the Beis HaMusar is going to serve as a flagstaff that's going to awaken and remind the passers-by, and again, even if you don't pass by, but the existence of the Beis HaMusar, that there's a place where he might want to go. And if he realizes that his lusts and his pleasure seeking is getting the best of him, realize that there is an existence here of a clinic that's going to help him. It's going to help him cleanse himself and overcome all these lusts and desires that are bringing him down. And here Rabbi Yisrael paraphrases a pasuk in the parish of Korach, suru l'toch o'ali. Now, in the parish of Korach, actually Moshe Rabbeinu says, remove yourself, distance yourself from the oil of the rebellious. Here too, by going and gravitating towards the Beis HaMusar, you're removing yourself from that part of your soul that's rebellious. And he says that the best time, this is the next paragraph, Larov, the best time during the week for the function, for the full activity of the Beis HaMusar on a general level, meaning for the public at large, is going to be at the end of Shabbos. Now this paragraph really indicates the impact that Rabbi Yisrael had. I said before that the Beis HaMusar idea did not necessarily catch fire during his lifetime, but one idea that really carries through the entire history of the Musav movement is what we call twilight at the end of Shabbos. And all of the famous schools of Musar would propagate this idea that that's the best time for a person to be in the mood. On the one hand, the mood that is typical of that time period, of that hour, is uplifted, it's joyous. You know, we've just experienced 23 hours of Shabbos. But on the other hand, it's a very somber and solemn kind of mood, because we realize that now we're going back to the daily chores and the daily activities of life of the week to come. And Rabbi Yisrael recommends that we have this tremendous emotional impact of an hour of Musar, the Beis HaMusar, at the end of Shabbos. And at that point, what's going to happen is the Ma'ariv, the Arvus afterwards, is going to be the most profound Ma'ariv that's going to again awaken our soul and make an impact on our soul. And not only that, it's going to spill over to the entire week to come. And the success is going to be measured by the fact that it creates within our heart a certain sensitivity. And it pumps up our ruach, our very strong, the wind, so to speak, or the spirit of the soul. And it's going to impact on our kochos hakeim in a brand new way. And that's what we said before, chadesh ruach nachon chadesh bekirbi. It's going to be a brand new man emerges from that hour as a brand new person. So that's very important. We'll talk later on. I don't know, it depends how long you'll last with me. But when we get to what's called the Nevardika Musa movement, which is also one of the branches of the Talmidim of Rav Yisrael, you'll see how important that Motzi Shabbos is. You should know, if you don't know it already, that many movements in Jewish life will use that time period as the most profound impact time period.
NCSY,
Bnei Akiva, Hasidus, everybody gets on the bandwagon. And Rav Yisrael was really the originator, because when he had the idea of a Beis Musar, he thought, then how do we get the people into the Beis HaMusar? When should we have them gravitate? The most important time is right before the end of Shabbos. Now we're in the paragraph that starts Milvad on the bottom of 299. And he says the following, that ultimately the goal of the study of Musar is not in the brain, but rather it's in the action of a person. What we call habitual action. And in order to change one's behavior pattern, we start with this avoda in which we try to have an impact that will penetrate our soul and transform us into people, individuals who are dedicated to Yira, to absolute fear and awe of God. And ultimately, what's going to happen is, if we succeed, our maisa, our actions, will speak louder than words. In other words, that's what he calls tikkun hakloli. He says there's a concept called tikkun hanefesh, which means that we work on our soul and transform our attributes, our desires, our inner feelings of who we are and what we are and where we want to go and what we want to do, what we want to accomplish. That's number one. But then there's something called a tikkun hakloli, in which we change our actual behavior pattern. That's the ultimate goal of the Beis HaMusar. And here he quotes a famous Gemara, which I believe is in Masechet Kiddushin, if I remember correctly, that says, "Poga b'chaminu v'lzeh, if this Yetzer Hara, this evil inclination, gets a hold of you, then grab him into the Beis HaMedrash." From Rabbi Yisrael's perspective, it's not enough just to grab him into the Beis HaMedrash to study theoretical conceptual Torah, but grab him into a Beis HaMusar, and there you're going to be so inspired by your study, by your introspection, by the emotional arousal, that you're going to have an impact on your soul. That's where you're going to succeed in overcoming this maneuver. This maneuver really is the, in a sense, it's the germ in medical terms, it's that system of germs, the virus or whatever it is, that tries to penetrate through your immune system. And now we're going to set up a spiritual immune system, and then we'll be able to have a refuah for cholei nefesh, not just a refuah for cholei guf. you can see, Rabosai, how there's a almost a parallel here, a direct relationship between what we would call a psychiatrist and a great man of Musar. Just like the psychiatrist is a medical doctor who is trying to focus on the Choli HaNefesh, on that which is the psyche of man, which is problematic, so too Musar is going to attack and try to heal those Choli HaNefesh, obviously from a Torah perspective. Now, in the paragraph that starts Milvad, he wants to suggest that we should really broaden our study of the halachos and find a way in which we could have a linkage between the study of halacha with all their great details and all their depth and the soul of man. And he writes the following. Here I want to read it to you because, again, this is from his Igeres Musa, a very famous letter that he wrote to the public about the Musar movement, and you'll see this in the paragraph Milvad on the third line. Once again, as I told you many times, the language and the Hebrew of Rabbi Yisrael is on a very high level. He says, "Hanisgav v'ha'ikar b'shimush refuas haTorah l'tochle hayetzer." What is the highest, loftiest level of using the Musar of the Torah to attack the Yetzer, which, as we said before, is the enemy of our soul? Limud bi'oz, to study with a great deal of force, of emotional energy, bi'iyun heitev, and with great depth, the dine ha'vera atzma. In other words, know thyself, if you are guilty of a certain kind of a sin, let's say you're not careful about speaking the truth, or maybe you're not careful about misleading people and deceiving them, maybe you're not so careful about not damaging other people's property, maybe you're not careful about speaking lashon hara, about it, whatever it is. And this, by the way, is where the Chafetz Chaim was so impacted by Rabbi Yisrael.
I was about to ask, is that in terms of the Chafetz Chaim being impacted by the Musar?
Tremendously. I mean, the Chafetz Chaim is one of the greatest proponents of Musar that ever lived. I mean, his flourishing period of time would be from 1870 or 1880 till, let's say, 1920. I mean, just right. Those are the outline.
Right.
And Rabbi Yisrael died in the 1880s. In other words, the Chafetz Chaim really picked up on Musar in the city of Radin and in the yeshiva of Radin, which was established by the Chafetz Chaim, and he took the ideas of Rabbi Yisrael to the next level.
I was thinking, you know, he has a sefer called Avos Chesed, which is a well-known sefer.
Correct.
In other words, where he's taking like an idea about Chesed, but giving the halachic parameters.
Exactly. Excellent idea. Excellent example. So he says we should be focused on the Torah, meaning the halacha of every single avera. And he gives examples that you and I would think, well, where are the halachas and where did Chazal make statements that I have to learn it in depth? He talks about masa umatan be'muna, where you enter into business transactions and people rely on you, you're absolutely trusting, your word is a good word. And there are all sorts of halachas about that. He mentions even the midah of gaiva, how much the halacha just finds it absolutely repulsive for a person to be so full of himself. He says we should be studying Chelkei HaTorah, those parts of the halacha that deal with Bein Adam L'Chavero, that deal with interpersonal relations, with chesed, and with avoiding any sort of creating problems or damaging other people. This has to be studied in great depth. And he says that iyun, because even though it's a limud be'iyun, but nevertheless it's going to have a tremendous impact on the soul. So that we have to understand and appreciate that Rabbi Yisrael's methodology is not just limited to what we call the classic study of Musar, but it also encompasses the study of the Torah and Halacha. And he says that, again, if we take a look at our generation, that's the last paragraph on the page, he says, Prutzim. Prutzim means that we've broken down the fences that would prevent us from hurting our friends. So in the area of Bein Adam L'Chavero, interpersonal relations, and again he goes through Lashon Hara, Masumat, and all these things, we are failing very miserably. You know, and when I read this, I always think of Chaim Brisker, you know, who said that, you know, Baruch Hashem, in Brisker, we don't need Musa because, you know, we're healthy. Well, Rabbi Yisrael didn't see it that way. Rabbi Yisrael said, you might see the people learning in Brisk, maybe they were, you know, dedicated to the Torah exclusively, nothing else interested them. But that's not typical of the Hamon Am, of the masses of people. They are not careful. They are mekil. They are very lenient with regard to gezel, with regard to stealing. And Rabbi Yisrael says that the law of the violation of stealing is just as severe as the violation of the veil of sedrefa. So, you know, we're very careful about making sure that we get the best hechsher, the shechita is perfect, and we completely ignore the issues of gzela. So we're very makil, and we're very lenient and laid back about gezel. We find all sorts of, and this is an interesting word that he uses here, four lines up before the end of the page, tachbulot. Tachbulot means instead of going straight and being honest, we look for tachbulot. You know, we look for ways of circumventing and tricking and fooling people. And we'll say, well, you know, he's doing it and he's doing it. And we'll overcharge and we'll underpay. And we'll say, well, you know, it's okay. And we find all sorts of justifications for it. And he says that not only is this a symptom of the difficulties that we have in our soul, in the kolchos hakeim, but moreover, it's a cause as well, because as a result of the involvement in these actions, they too have an impact on the kolchos hakeim. So we're really in a vicious cycle, which we have to break out of, because when we completely ignore these laws, it becomes second nature to us. We don't even stop and think about it. And therefore, it's very, very difficult for us to extricate ourselves from these violations. Now we're on the top of page 301. He says that even if a person on a theoretical level will give you lip service and he has a hakara, he acknowledges the significance of his obligations in this area, nevertheless, his nature is pulling him in the other direction, and he has to break that nature. He has to, again, here you'll see it bolded on the fourth line, liknos teva acher, to possess and acquire a whole new nature, to absolutely transform his relationship to these areas, such that his kochos keim will respond in a totally different way, out of a sense of hitrakshut, of rigishut, of sensitivity, of feeling for the next one, of musar, of ethics. All this has to come at the end of the process of study, of introspection, of its orus, of awakening our soul. This is the purpose of the musar methodology. And therefore, Rav Yisrael makes this radical breakthrough. He says people are studying Orachayim. They should give no less time and attention, and maybe even more attention to Choshen Mishpat, right? Jack, are you aware of the fact that Shulchan Aruch is broken up into four branches? Does that mean anything to you? Okay, so we're going to just focus on two out of the four. You know, the other two have to do with shechita, with slaughtering an animal, or with marriage laws and so forth, you know, family laws. But leave out those two. The other two branches are dedicated to the daily responsibilities of the halacha, as I said before, you know, prayer and kriyat shema and brachos and tefillin and tzitzis and so forth. That's called orachaim. And then there's another branch that deals with the monetary law. How do I observe the monetary law? And it's a massive amount of study. You know, it's not like, you know, if you go to law school, you can take a 6-month course in tort law, you know, and then after 6 months, you're an expert in tort law. You know, in halacha, it doesn't work like that. My mechutin, whose son is married to my daughter, he has a kollel of 150 young men that are dedicated to the study of Choshen Mishpat, the minimum amount of time till you get any sort of accreditation or certification is 10 years.
Wow.
You're talking about people who are old enough to be your father, probably. You know what I'm saying? These are mature scholars that are dedicating their lives to the study of Choshen Mishpat. Some of them will become judges. But Rabbi Yisrael is not talking about judges. He's not addressing himself to those elite few who will be the judges of Israel. He's talking about the rank and file citizen of Klal Yisrael. And he's saying that we make a big mistake We think that an anoshim stam on the fourth line in this paragraph, meaning your rank and file citizen, ain lo inyan bazeh. What does he have to, what relationship does he have with choshev mishpat that's four judges? And why should he replace, you know, whatever precious time he can dedicate to Orach Chaim, the daily laws, and dedicate it, redirect it to the study of choshev mishpat? Says Rabbi Yisrael, that's a mistake. If you think that all you have to study is the laws of Kriyat Shema and Tefillah and Tzitzis and Tefillah and Shabbos and Mo'adim, he says you're making a tremendous mistake. And here I want you to underline, we'll count down 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 lines down in the paragraph L'shem, and if you can highlight the words Kol Adam, you can't paint these two words in too many colors. No matter how many colors you use, it's not enough. Kol Adam, every single person on a daily basis is going to encounter Dini Momenos. Do you hear what he's saying, Rav Osa? You know, you would think, okay, you know, once in a lifetime I borrow money, or somebody lends, I lend money. You know, once in a lifetime I purchase a piece of real estate and I have to know the laws. Well, you know, if I'm a businessman, okay, it's a little bit more frequent. He's saying no. Every single person has an encounter with laws of Mammon on a daily basis. And he says it's not less frequent than my encounter with Orach Chaim. Again, if he's exaggerating, please tell me. But it doesn't sound like the man is just giving you a hyperbole. He means this for real. And he says that the critical, you know, just like we achieve in Kriyat Shema Hergel, you know, who would mess up on reading the three parashas of Kriyat Shema on a daily basis? He says we have to create and generate a parallel Hergel in which we are habitually addicted, or what's the word, conditioned to observe to the T the laws of Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. And therefore, Rabbi Yisrael says that we have to make sure that Balabatim, your so-called regular Jew, Poshini Yid as we call him, has to dedicate himself to the study of Choshen Mishpat, no less than to the study of Orach Chaim. This was very radical. I'm not sure that Rabbi Yisrael achieved his goal. Again, once again, we're learning the methodology of Rabbi Yisrael. Not everything, you know, landed in the right place. But he says the following, and here we're going to read a piece from, again, his famous Igeres HaMusar. This is about 8 lines up before the end of the paragraph, the end of the page. He says, Im yasim adam libo v'nafsho l'limud halachot asher chol l'mamed b'irun, if he will dedicate his heart and his soul to achieve the goal of studying the laws of the monetary laws in great depth, with one Gemara, by the way, Gemara means 1/6 of Shas. In terms of Talmud Bavli, it's a lot more than 1/6. It's probably somewhere between a sixth and a third, because the Bavas themselves are massive. I mean, you know, you're talking about easily 400 to 500 block Gemara, just in the Bavas. I'm not talking about Sanhedrin, and I'm not talking about other parts of Nezikin. It's a massive, massive amount. That's called Gemara. Now, if you think that's massive, look at the next word, poskim. And that's what I told you about the Kola that's studying for 10 years, the poskim. I mean, all the rulings. Ish lefi ercho. Again, there'll be some people who might get a deeper comprehension, some less. But nevertheless, everyone's involved in this. He says, "Im amerkaz yel tchunat iser veheter." He says, "If you want to focus on that area of choshev mishpat, which is iser veheter, meaning what are you allowed and permissible, what are you not allowed?" Leida, he has to know echlish tamir mi gezel. Now, gezel means theft. If you recall the Ashamnu Bogad news that we recite over and over again on Yom Kippur, or for that matter, if you happen to be familiar with the Nusach Sfar that's very popular here, or the Sephardic rite that's probably 55% of the public here, and in the religious observance that's probably 75% of the public. So the third word in the Ashamnu Bogadnu is Gazalnu. I mean, give it a break. Over and over again, and on the Holy of Holies, I have to say Gazalnu. So one of the great Bali Musar of our time, who's the Mashkiach in a yeshiva called Lakewood in New Jersey that claims, I think, over 5,000 students, but it's a lot more than 5,000 because there's a lot of people who are only half-time. You know, they've already graduated the yeshiva, they're married, they're working, but they spend many hours in the yeshiva. His name is Rav Solomon, and this man has written, and maybe again, if I get a chance to photocopy, just this one major chapter in his book that's dedicated to one word in that rite, R-I-T-E, right, called Gazalvo. And he gives you examples after examples of how, without even realizing it, we violate Gezel. And he says that we have a taiva rabba b'zeh. He says the violation of Gezel is something that attracts us, and we have a desire to take that which is not ours. There's a famous story. I told you I'd like to spice it up with stories of Rabbi Yisrael. They asked Rabbi Yisrael, why is it that when he washes his hands in the Tilos Yadayim, they notice that he just barely takes enough water to wash his hands. Everybody else is going this way and that way, three times in each hand. He says, because that's Gezel. Why? Because this poor woman has to schlep, you know, they had the buckets on two sides. What's the word for it? The yoke with the buckets.
Yeah, I don't know.
The water carriers. Anyway, the water carriers. And she has to carry enough water to make sure that everyone is able to fulfill the mitzvah of Netilas Yadayim. If you take more water than you need, according to Halacha, then what you're doing is you're stealing her time. Because why does she have to provide you with extra water? And not only that, you're stealing her efforts. That's also kind of a gezel, because she's putting in extra time and extra work in order to carry this for you. And there are millions of stories about Rabbi Yisrael, about how he opened our eyes to realize that very often our stringencies are on someone else's back, you know, on their cheshbon. We're taking away from them. And therefore, we have to get to the point to which the Iser Gezel should be appreciated as on the same level as the Iser of any other type, whether it's Nevelis or Trefos. And he says that I want to present the following programs to change the face of our behavior in this area of Benon L'Chaveru. Here we're on page 302. Because this area represents fundamentals. And in terms of Musar, these are the fundamentals. So we have to be Mechadish, we have to go back anew and rededicate ourselves, even in the house of study, forget about the house of Musar, to an in-depth study in which we can comprehensively understand not only the Gemaras, but also the Poskim and all the issues that could possibly come up. And therefore he says, let's talk about one particular time of the year. Meaning, even if we haven't succeeded the whole year round, and unfortunately I haven't yet created this system of Bate Musa where people gravitate on a weekly basis, or maybe during Ben Hashmashas of Shabbos, at the very least, let's put all our efforts into the month of Elul and the 10 days after the month of Elul. And again, you know, today in the yeshivas, this is like, in Yiddish we call it upgered, you know, nobody even blinks about it. But people don't realize how much Rabbi Yisrael led the way to our work, our spiritual work, during this period of time. Before Rabbi Yisrael, it wasn't so. I mean, people got in the mood for Yom Noraim, for the Holy High Holidays, but it wasn't a systematic study, a discipline unto itself. And this is, in Rabbi Yisrael's very last letter, before he died, as we'll see, he left this as his legacy, and he begged his students to go out and establish and influence and awaken people to utilize the month of El to its maximum. And he speaks about how this month could have such an impact on the personality to inspire and uplift the personality to the highest level of ruchaniyut, of spirituality. And he would say that sometimes if a person has one opportunity in his lifetime, and he takes advantage of that to change and transform his whole personality, has an impact on his whole life. And that's what Elul presents for us. And therefore, he was absolutely opposed, and he really castigated those who would develop a system of fast days during Elul, of dedicating themselves to recite slichos and vidui and confession, and that became hergel. It became almost part of the, you know, part of the system. That's not enough, because we have to work very hard during this period of time, not on fasting and not on just lip service and reciting vidui, but rather on finding tachbulos. Remember, I spoke about the fact that people in business, sometimes they find tachbulos. You know, they circumvent the law and they come up with different excuses. He says, we have to find tachbulos to figure out how to avoid those evil influences that make us into hergel, that make us into robots. We have to find a way of experiencing tshuva on the most profound level, on a genuine level. So therefore, vidui is not only meaningless if you don't have the proper intention, but worse than that, he calls it a chutzpah klapi shamayim. By the way, I saw once a tshuva from one of the great Sephardic rabbis, who was the Stei Chemed. He was Rav here in Yerushalayim over a century ago, probably 120 years ago. His name will come back to me in a second. Anyway, the Stei Chemed writes that he's not necessarily in favor of reciting vidui on a daily basis, because it becomes such a hergel that it becomes a chutzpah. You say to Hashem, I'm confessing on this crime and that crime, when you're not sincere about it at all. And he's saying it's like coming in front of the Ribbono Shel Olam and saying, Chatasi v'yashuv lachto. I sinned, but I'm going to go back and sin again. That's not a sincere vidui. That's a chutzpah. You have no embarrassment to say in front of the Almighty God that you're going to do tshuva, and then you know very well that you walk out of the Beis Medrash and you do and repeat the same and the same crime again and again. Harisa garua yoser. If you want to highlight those words, it's even worse. This is the paragraph that starts ulam.
Which words?
Yeah, you see a paragraph that starts with the word ulam.
Okay.
So if you count down about seven lines, you'll see the word lachto. That's about five lines up before the end of the paragraph. You have it? And you want to underline the words Hareza garua yoser mimishalo hisvada klal. It's worse than not confessing at all. And therefore he says we have to dedicate our energies during the month of El to arouse ourselves to do a sincere tshuva. And he says, although we shouldn't be happy just with El, but he says, you know what? If we accomplish what we have to accomplish in El, it's going to have an impact on the entire year. And therefore, El itself is a time that's dedicated to this Musar study and this Musar changing and transforming our kochos hanefesh and our behavior pattern, and that's what El is meant to be. Rabbi Yisrael writes many letters to his disciples to impress upon them the importance of not ignoring or missing the opportunity of El, to make sure that El is spent in a way that's dedicated to the study of Musar. He says that some people think that just blowing the shofar is going to awaken us. Maybe back in the day, at the time of the Rambam, that was sufficient, you know, 1,000 years ago. But he says, if you look at our dar, with all the respect to shofar, it's not enough to accomplish. You remember last week we spoke about the concept of timtum alev. It repeats itself again here. Timtum alev means when he has dross around his heart, and that sort of covers his heart, and it's very hard to pierce through that dross, through that timtum alev. He says what we can accomplish if we have the right mental and emotional state and dedication during the month of Elul is that we could be mafazer timtum alev. We could actually break open all these barriers and films, you know, that cause a cloggage, so to speak, and don't let us penetrate into our hearts. And all this is going to reach its pinnacle on the Day of Judgment, on Rosh Hashanah, and during the Aseres Yemei Tshuva, culminating in the pinnacle of Yom Kippur, to come to a state of Shivron Halev, in which we feel totally broken. We feel a sense of fear, and we're awakening ourselves to Shinui Derech, to change our entire pattern. Instead of putting the emphasis on our pleasures in life, on making more money, we have a whole new system of priorities that's going to replace the old one. And he says, you can't do it in one fell swoop, just, you know, decide that you're going to stop and change. It's got to be a process. And this process could begin on the first of Elul and culminate on Yom Kippur. And it's going to have an impact of Shviras HaLev, of breaking our heart, so to speak, our heart that's dedicated towards other pleasures in life. Again, this is all predicated on the assumption that you have a lev shalem, that you are absolutely complete and total in your dedication to this endeavor. And therefore, we have to prepare ourselves for Yom Kippur. Now, how do we prepare ourselves for Yom Kippur? The ultimate goal, says Rabbi Yisrael, is what we call a Kabbalah. So you take a look two lines up before the end. Well, actually, you know, you don't even have to do that. The last line on the page, He calls it Kabbalah Ma'asit. Now, what does this mean, Kabbalah Ma'asit? How do I stand in front of Almighty God on Yom Kippur and tell Him, in all honesty, I'm not the same person, and what I did last year is, I'm changing my ways? He says you have to accept upon yourself some commitment before Yom Kippur. Now, here I think of Yisrael, again, just from my personal experience in the yeshivas and the musas, places that I studied in, he had a tremendous success.
But isn't this, is this not a traditional idea? Or it says
comes from Rabbi Yisrael.
No, not only does Kabbalah al-As, isn't that...
Well, wait a minute. Kabbalah al-As, it means if I violate a certain sin, that's not what Rabbi Yisrael is talking about. If I violated sin X, then in order to do tshuva and come to HaKadosh Baruch Hu with Vidu and Yom Kippur, I need Kabbalah al-As, I have to have a resolution on the future. That's not what he's talking about. He's talking about taking upon ourselves a brand new Kabbalah, some stringency or some acceptance. We're going to give 10 examples in a second, and that those are going to indicate a new Kabbalah that's going to change us. Here's where Rabbi Yisrael came up with a revolutionary method that was not known before Rabbi Yisrael. So let's take a look at his, oh, he has actually, okay, some of these we'll have to drop because they're not for us, but they're officially, there are 13 examples. Again, you have to figure out where you want to fit into them. And it's a very individual, personal idea. But whatever these Kabbalahs are, they have to be A, sincere. B, they have to be doable. Because again, if they're not doable, then you've taken upon yourself a kind of a pledge and you're violating the pledge. That's not too healthy. Number three, it's got to be something that if you habitually dedicate yourself to it, it's going to have an impact on your soul. Okay, so what are the examples? So the first example is that I accept upon myself the obligation to create an individual personal plan. It's interesting, he writes the word plan in English, not in English, it's really in Yiddish, because plan is a German word. And what it means is that I have to actually sit down with myself and create a plan, create a program. And the goal of that program is to somehow have an emotional impact on my very soul. Number two.
Sorry, this is the this is Aleph and then Bet?
That's Aleph.
Okay.
So far, Aleph.
Okay.
Again, these are all suggestions. You have to figure out which of these suggestions, if any, are, you know, fit like a glove for you. Number two, another possibility, is to study Sifrei Musar L'Bekiyus. Okay, you can underline that word Bekiyus, meaning to study at a fast pace the books of Musa. Sometimes the more Musa that you study, the more it has a cumulative effect on your soul.
What Musa Sfarim is...
Oh, we're going to discuss that in the next chapter, Mitzvah Hashem. Which Musa Sfarim were on Rabbi Yisrael's list?
Right.
Number three. Now we get to a more profound kind of study of Musa. Not a general Bekiyah study of Musa, but a very limited, restricted study of Musa. And that is to choose for yourself which essays, I would say, or which titles or topics in Musa can bring you to a state of hitpa'alut. That's a word that we've seen over and over again in Rabbi Yisrael.
How's it translated?
Hitpalut means a state of an emotional frenzy, an emotional high. You know, Rabbi Yisrael gives the example of waves that rise very high, and it's a storm. He calls it Sarat HaNefesh. That was, I think, 2 weeks ago. I don't know. And then he goes on to number four, and he says that everyone should keep an Aleph base, like a...
Journal.
It's called an alfon in modern Hebrew. What it means is that he should make a list of statements in Chazal that speak to his heart, that inspire him. You know, we've heard different essays during the course of our lifetime, but we never bothered keeping a scorecard, you know, a list of which statements or essays in Chazal. Now, number five, I think, is a next step. You know, let's say he accepted upon himself number four last year. This year, he should go a step further and should accept upon himself the goal that all of those essays that he wrote on his list as a personal individual list should be shgurim, Okay, that's the key word in number 5. You see the word shkurim. And shkurim means that he knows it by heart in the middle of his sleep. Number 6, he might accept upon himself to choose a Gemara that he can review over and over again and know it cold.
Means a Masechta?
A Masechta, yeah, he calls a Girsa. Ezu Gemara, Ezu Girsa. But the main thing is to review it over and over again. Number 7, Rabbi Yisrael advocates that a person should set up a shiur, meaning either a study session or an individual session, in the study of Choshen Mishpat. And again, when he studies Choshen Mishpat, it has to be lishma for the sake of God and for lamaisa for the sake of action. Number 8, he should accept upon himself that at least, meaning we're so distracted during davening, but the minimum of minimum is to have the right kavanah when you cite the name of God. Most of us have no clue what kavanah we should have. There are two major names of God. There's Elohim and Yudke Vavke. And they have fundamentally different meanings. He says if you can't do it for all the names of God, at least choose Tfilas Arvis. Now, why does he choose Tfilas Arvis, Myriv? For one of two reasons. Either because at the end of the day, a person has the Rosham of the entire day, and now's the time to think about God. Or alternatively, it could be that now that he's finished all his chores for the day, Arvis, more than any other tefillah, can be recited without pressure. When I went to college, I went to a Jackie, you're not from New York, so you would never have heard of Queens College. Anyway, it's part of City University of New York, CUNY. So that's where I did my undergraduate. And I remember almost every day that I went to college, I used to go twice a week. One semester I did 4 times a week. And especially during the winter, I used to daven mincha in a phone booth. Now you have to picture the scene. Every few seconds, the operator would get on the phone. It wasn't really a human operator. It was a recording and said, please replace the receiver on the hook. It's off the hook. And it was very embarrassing because although it was a little bit of a booth, and I hoped that nobody realized what I was doing over there, but you know, there was some suspicious people. So that's how we chaparai the mincha. It's like taking a break in the middle of the day, you know, for mincha. I heard once from Rav Shapiro of North Miami Beach. He said that why do we break the middle matzah? So some say that the 3 matzahs that we have on the Seder plate represent Shachris, Mincha, Mayim. So we have to break the middle matzah, which is the Mincha matzah, to tell us, take a break for Mincha. So we have to take a break in the middle of the day. My father told me in his shtetl, a store owner, in the middle of the day, would put out a sign that said on it, Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalet, which were Rashi Tevis for Ich bin gegangen daven, that I went to daven. You know, that was the sign. In number 10, Lisragel lechaven bebirkas amazon, at least shtei brachas arishonos. If I were able to add something, I would say make sure to recite birkas amazon from a sitter, from a birkon, as we call it, because otherwise it's so easy to lose your place. And by the way, it gets worse when you get older. The older you get, the more you forget where you're holding. Number 11, he says that he should at least dedicate 2 days out of every week to be committed to recite brachos properly. Now here, I'm lost. He says on Wednesday and on Shabbos. Now, when it gets to Shabbos, I can understand. I have the Neshama Yisera, I'm a little bit more calm. It's more feasible that I could concentrate on my tefillos. Not only that, but because I recite, you know, very few brachas on Shabbos, a lot of brachas that are cut out, right? The 19 brachas of Shmona Esrei are reduced to 7 brachas. So those few brachas that I recite on Shabbos, I should be mekabel on myself to recite the bracha with great kavana, not just spit it out. But why does he have Wednesday? Wednesday is like the middle day.
Wednesday is the Achana.
In Yiddish, it's called Mittwoch. The middle of the week is called Wednesday.
I was going to say, Wednesday is the Achana of the Shabbos.
Oh, it could be that Wednesday is the point in the week where the influence and the impact of Shabbos is terminated. Because, for example, if you didn't make Avdolah, Wednesday is already too late. And now Wednesday is the propelling point, the pivotal point towards the next Shabbos. Number Yud Beis. He says to dedicate it 2 days out of each week, Lahavir tachat chug habikoret ha'ovar, to make sure that he looks over the past. Now they say about the Gaon of Vilna, who is also, by the way, we didn't read those chapters, but he was one of the precursors of the Musar movement, that he used to keep a ledger in which he would write down how many minutes he wasted his time. And they say that in an average year it was less than 20 minutes. Like some say it was less than 10 minutes. But he kept a ledger. Now later on when we get to Ben Franklin, that's, you know, in 2 chapters from now, we're going to talk about keeping a ledger, and every week we take another midah of the 13 midos. Again, it's not really coming from Ben Franklin, it's coming from a book called Tikkun HaMidos. But that book, Tikkun HaMidos, is based on Ben Franklin. We don't know what Ben Franklin is based on. That's an interesting study. And then he gets to the last one, which he says, called Echad V'Echad Yevakesh Sheyiu Miu'odim Lo Teisha Noshim. This I don't understand exactly what he means. In other words, he has to designate 9 of his friends to make sure that he always has a minion. Now, again, I don't know what he does. He sends out a... what's that called? Facebook notice, you know, and he tells the 7 friends, you know, we're getting together now for a minyan. And he says that somehow, you know, when we work together and we're on the same page, we'll strengthen each other. And he goes beyond tefillah. He says that this group of 10 people will strengthen each other vis-a-vis any masach, any barrier that separates us from our Father in heaven. Any timtum alev. So he want. This is what I call the group effort.
This sounds like a special group for davening that you pull together.
Well, he takes it beyond davening. If you see, Rabbi Yisrael says, not only is it important for davening, but that we work together to remove. He calls it the masach, right? That's the curtain or the barrier that separates us from Avinu Shebashamayim. So I think he's referring to many different kinds of sins. And he calls them sins shemetamtimos as lev ha'adam. Right? There are certain sins that have a terrible, corruptive impact on the soul. So this is what I call the group effort. And we'll see in the history of the Musar movement that this last Kabbalah had a tremendous impact in terms of the group effort. Again, I refer you to Rav Horovitz, that's the Alta of Nevardik. The Nevardik and Derech of Musar was always a group effort, that we work as a group, and the seeds have been sown by Rav Yisrael in this 13th recommendation for Yom Kippur. Now the point is that if I accept any of these 13 before Yom Kippur, again assuming I'm sincere and I know I can live up to it, then I'm saying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as I enter into this new year, I'm a new person. I'm only a new person vis-a-vis that one Kabbalah, but that's enough. Eini Oso Ha'ish, the Rambam in Hilchos Teshuvah speaks about changing your name. So he's not advocating changing your name. That's a little too drastic. And in America, to change your name on a passport is very complicated. They always suspect you of some sort of swindling. But what you could do is take upon yourself one of these Kabbalahs. I just want to reminisce for a moment about my Rebbe when I was 18 in Yeshiva Keren B'Yavna. His name was Rav Be'eri Shlita. He's still alive and well, Baruch Hashem. And he had a tremendous impact on the Musa, on the Musa and our yeshiva, because he came from a real classical Musa yeshiva called Panovich. Have you heard of it? Mm-hmm. Panovich is a Lithuanian yeshiva that was transplanted to Israel, and it's in Bnei Brak. And there's a tremendous emphasis there on Musa. And he had an influence on our young souls. I mean, we came from modern yeshivas in America. I mean, we were ready for this. So he gave us, before Yom Kippur, the following Musa Shmuz. He said, we have to take upon ourselves a Kabbalah. And he gave us 2 examples. When I heard the first example, I almost fainted. Because he said in the introduction, just simple little Kabbalahs that you'll be certain to do. Not to read newspapers on Shabbos. At that point, I just wanted to say, I'm out of here. I mean, if he considers that a simple Kabbalah, no reading of newspapers on Shabbos. I mean, you have to picture my living room. My living room is like floor-to-ceiling newspapers on Shabbos. But then he said, and this to this day I try to keep, I say this with tears in my eyes because I remember that day that he spoke when I was 18 years old. And he said to make sure that you always bench from a sitter or from a birkon. And to this day, again, there's certain, now I have this, so I have the built-in sitter, you know, so I can do it with my computer, with my phone. But I try very hard, you know, to live up to that. But it's just so fascinating that at the age of 18, it made such an impact on me that so many years later, I still remember that Musa Shmuz that he gave us. Just to finish up this chapter so we can start the next chapter, which is 22, next week in Rosh Hashem. He says that Rabbi Yisrael would warn us and impress upon us that we should never assume that his intention is to replace the learning of Gemara and Poskim with the learning of Musa. With all the emphasis on awakening ourselves through the study of Musa, Rabbi Yisrael never stopped warning us, and this comes from another one of his great Talmidim, Rabbi Naftali Amsterdam, to make sure that our learning of Gemara and Poskim is holy of holies. It should never be interrupted. That is Kodesh Kadoshim. Lo lafrias limud haGemara Poskim beglal limud haMusar. But the only exception was during the 10 days of Tshuva from Rosh Hashanah to Yom Kippur. On those 10 days, Rabbi Yisrael would teach us and rule that we should minimize, if necessary, our study of Gemara and Poskim for the sake of grasping on to this wonderful opportunity, the power that's inherent in these 10 days to reach Yira, to achieve a tremendous impact of arousing our emotional state towards Musar and towards Yira. That tshuva we have to take advantage of. And that's what the Rambam says in Hilchos Tshuva, that during these 10 days, it's not just an option to do tshuva, but it's an absolute obligation to do tshuva. So the rest of the year, again, the emphasis on Limud Gemara and Poskim. Again, Rabbi Yisrael might shift the emphasis from the Poskim on Orach Chaim to the Poskim on Chol Shei Mishpat, but nevertheless, never to undermine our absolute dedication to the study of Gemara and Poskim. He says that people on page 305 who have very limited time period, they should still make sure to guarantee that Limud HaMusar, Lo Yafria, should not interrupt or interfere with their Shos Kvuos, their set times for the study of Torah. He says it's very easy to get sidetracked, and we should make sure not to do so. And ultimately, the story at the end, remember I told you there's a little story here at the end, this is a very famous story, you'll laugh because everybody knows this story, that a person came to Rabbi Yisrael and he was very tired, he was very preoccupied with his work, it consumed all of his time. He says that in the course of a day, maybe he could squeeze out one short interval of time. And he asked Rabbi Yisrael, what should I study? Should I study Gemara? Or should I study Musa? And Rabbi Yisrael said, study Musa, because if you study Musa, you'll find many hours in the day to study Torah, Gemara, and Poskim. Okay then?
Very good.
Thank you so much.